AutoLine After Hours is brought to you by Bridgestone. Your journey, our passion.
This is AutoLine After Hours with John McElroy, episode 183 for February 15th, 2013. Inside the Ford C-Max Energy. Watch AutoLine After Hours live at AutoLine.tv every Thursday at 6 p.m. Eastern Time or 2300 GMT. You can subscribe to this podcast for free by searching for AutoLine in iTunes, Stitcher, or by following the links on our website.
Mr. DeLorenzo.
Gianni, how are you?
I'm doing good, man. It's been a good week.
Yeah, it has been.
Yeah.
It's been very good.
And we got to say hi to this guy. Todd Lassa is joining us, too, from Automobile.
So, gentlemen.
Good having you back, Todd.
Good to be here.
How long has it been now? 2 months?
Cool. Late November is when I started.
Yeah. The switch from Motor Trend to Automobile.
Yes.
How's the commute? You hate it, right?
I don't hate it because, A, it's not my own car. And it's actually not that bad. Would I like a shorter commute? Well, maybe, but if nothing else, I get to, learn a little bit more about each car I drive.
That's true.
Yeah.
The more time, more seat time, the more you learn about them. Hey, a couple of things I wanted to talk about. I think this is a seminal week for the automotive industry because I'm saying we're seeing two new technologies debuting or about to debut that I think are transformational on AutoLine Daily this week. I did a piece on this new kind of, I don't want to call it a spark plug, but I will just so everyone understands. It's developed by the supplier company Federal Mogul. Instead of a 1 millimeter gap like in a normal spark plug and, you hear that little snap, 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 this thing shoots out what looks like lightning bolts. It's some sort of ionized charge. Here, Ben's got it up there. And that's the other amazing thing. You can touch the spark. It doesn't do anything to you. Whereas if you tried that with a spark plug, I mean, it would knock you on your ass. And the thing that I found so interesting about this is instead of running a stoichiometric air-to-fuel ratio of roughly 15 to 1, they're saying you can go to 30 to 1. And instead of doing 20% EGR or something, they're saying like 30, 40% EGR. Mm. So I find this fascinating. And, if you go back just a little over 100 years ago, maybe a little bit more than 100, the spark plug was introduced. They used to use glow wires instead of spark plugs. So this thing that Federal Mogul's got is not going to show up until around 2017 or so. But nonetheless, I think this is the beginning of the end of the spark plug.
Well, I'm glad it's not going to show up till 2017. I'm still getting used to the fact that you don't have to change the ones in your current car until you get to, 100,000 miles now.
Right. And then the other transformative technology that Chevrolet announced this week is that there's this little vent in the back of the new Corvette that they open and close using shape memory alloys. And I find that intriguing because, to my knowledge, this is the first application of this kind of technology in a production car.
I still have my little sample spring. I think this is the same thing.
It is.
At a tech presentation probably a year and a half, 2 years ago or something, they handed those out. And,
I know for a fact they've been working on this for over five years.
Sure.
Not for the flapper valve in the VET, but on these shape memory alloys.
Shape memory alloys.
So I just mention that because, to me, these are transformative technologies, and I think it's worth noting when the auto industry adopts something or is about to adopt something that's never been used before.
Well, they should come up with a name for that spark generator. They should come up with something.
Yeah, they remember, Federal Mogul owns Champion Spark Plug, so they don't like me saying, hey, this is the end of the spark plug. They go, no, we're going to build millions for years to come, and they are, but they're calling it ACES, which is... Automotive Corona Ignition System.
Yeah, whatever. Come up with a name. I mean, Ford came up with EcoBoost, which is just direct fuel injection and turbocharging, and you know, they probably didn't think 2 minutes about it. Now everyone, you know, it's done pretty well as a brand.
Right.
But they better come up with something besides that.
Well, I think that was certainly a Jim Farley thing, the EcoBoost name. And when they showed us that technology, they went several months, you know, without having a specific name for it. I remember Derek Cusack talking about that at a
There was another name before EcoBoost.
Was there?
Yeah. It was like an engineering, it came out of engineering, not out of marketing.
Sure. Yeah,
and
well,
same with this ASUS. It's coming out of Federal Mogul's engineering, not
marketing.
I'm out
of Federal Mogul. You got 5 years. Let's come up with something.
You know, the bigger picture thing is that this Federal Mogul technology is just another example of how, no matter how much we talk about electrification of automobiles, how much we talk about, you know, well, now Mercedes and Ford and Nissan are working on fuel cells for 2017. There's still a lot of life left in the internal combustion engine.
Oh, we'll be having ICs till 2050.
Of course. And that's the point, is that, you know, no matter how much we kind of limp forward to these alternative technologies, these alternative power plants, you know, you can get to what you need to do, emissions and fuel economy with...
Absolutely, Todd. And as I've been arguing for years now, the real problem's with the fuel.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, we're on the verge of being able to come out with lower carbon fuel. So, you know, instead of just putting the onus on the automobile to clean everything up, you know, we got to put more of the onus on the oil refiners to start coming up with cleaner fuel, and that could make a huge difference.
Don't get me started on the oil refiners, on big oil, because that's been a problem for a long, long time. Look at how much arm twisting it took to get them to lower sulfur in U.S. diesel and, you know, clean that up.
Yeah. Big fight. That's right.
Yeah.
Hey, another thing, I don't know if you guys have seen it yet, but I finally got a copy of Ed Whitaker's book, you know, former CEO and chairman of General Motors.
The fictional account of his years at General Motors, a bunch of bullshit.
Well, it was kind of interesting. You know, this has already come out, how much he wanted Mark Royce to become the next CEO of the company.
We'll give him that. That's worthy of some...
But the other thing that
I
was shocked to see is he doesn't have a lot of good things to say about Bob Lutz in the book either. So I think once this thing really gets out there, everybody at GM is going to be running to see what he's got to say.
Well, the recount of how the board actually made the decision to give Ackerson the job is just embarrassing. It's embarrassing. It's supposed to be one of the corporate icons. Certainly of America. It used to be a corporate icon of the world, and they're just kind of fumbling around. Well, who wants it? And Ackerson, you know.
Well, he wanted it from day one, is what Whitaker says in his book. In fact, we're going to have Whitaker in the studio here next week. He's as part of his book tour.
Oh.
So I think there's more to the story than what he's put in the book. I think he's being a little kind to some of the people who are still there. But I found it interesting that he even went after Bob Lutz, saying that he figured in his walking around the company that Bob Lutz's job was simply to sit around and give his opinion to people. So he takes him on pretty hard. It's kind of interesting to me.
I think if you look back at Bob Lutz's second career at General Motors, this last decade, basically, I mean, I like a lot of... We all loved him because of the stuff he said. We all loved him because, as journalists, that is, because he was very quotable. He'd leak some stuff to us, and he was mostly leaking stuff that he was trying to get past. But he also wanted to try to get a lot of stuff done in a short period of time. I think he knew he wasn't going to be there for a terrible, great amount of time.
Even though he was.
So something like, well, he was, but, I mean, he, you know, the rush to get that Pontiac Solstice out is what hurt that car. If they had taken the time to do with that what Mazda did with the Miata, they might have had a viable Miata competitor, even though that's a low-volume segment anyway. But still, it would have been a good kind of halo for them.
Well, I think Glutz still gets credit for straightening out the product development message.
Agreed, exactly.
Hugely. Yeah. I mean, yeah. You can't criticize the guy for, and he did it pretty quickly, too.
No, and I think on balance, having him at GM that last decade was much better than not having him at GM. And they need someone like him always near the top. Even just to say things, just to say you're doing this wrong.
Mm-hmm.
I think he was well known for going into boardroom meetings or into executive meetings and cutting through the clutter and saying, look, this is BS. You're doing this wrong. So,
well, it's the smartest two things Rick Wagner did. One, get GM engaged in China, and two, bringing Lutz in.
Yep.
Although I think the China credit may actually go to Jack Smith.
Well, yeah.
Wagner's predecessor.
Wagner executed it.
Yeah, he did. Right. Peter, what do you make of Chevy's new advertising tagline? You wrote about that this week.
Yeah, I wrote about it this week. I was disappointed. I mean, there's some good little visual bits in it, but generally I don't think it's a heroic Chevrolet campaign. To me, a great Chevy campaign should be heroic and powerful and almost a call to action for the country. This one's quiet, it's kind of quirky, and it's almost like you're asleep at the wheel. And, you know, even the theme, Find New Roads, it's like we've given up, you know, energizing you and urging you to do great things. Just go out and find your own roads. You know, it's just something, it's a disconnect.
It's not a powerful state.
No, and I talked about there's kind of an undercurrent in advertising today that I just think it's lacking. Automotive advertising is really lacking right now.
You know, we had this period of retro cars, and we still have a lot of retro cars around the Mini Cooper. The current Camaro has got a lot of 1969 Camaro Qs in it. Why not just bring back baseball hot dogs, apple pie, and Chevrolet? I mean, that's better than anything they've done.
Well, they've had three great campaigns. See the USA in your Chevrolet, yeah. Dinosaur.
Even better.
Yeah, baseball, hot dogs, apple pie, and Chevrolet, and the heartbeat of America. And my friend Jerry Burton came up with that line for a motorsports brochure or a catalog promotional thing, and it was plucked and turned into the campaign. And maybe Like a Rock was, you know, maybe second tier. And
that was trucks only, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was trucks only. And I predict they'll bring it back for the Silverado in the fall because they just, you know, they couldn't come up with anything better than that. But, you know, this campaign's just, you know, it's lacking. And that's all there is to it. I mean, there's some nice visuals in it, but it's just so matter of fact, quiet. And some would argue, oh, well, that's the times, you know, bull, you know, come up with something. Come up with something. Get people jacked. You know, this apologetic, oh, please try one of our cars and go out and find your own. Come on.
What's Toyota's? Because it almost sounds a lot like Toyota's.
I'm forgetting it's so memorable. Yeah. I've got it on my phone somewhere. It's Let's Go Places. Hey. Oh, there's a good one, too.
Yeah.
Finding roads so we can be going places. So,
yeah.
I mean, there's another example of retro. Bring back, what a feeling Toyota. I mean, way better than anything they've done recently.
You know, before Nissan changed Datsun to Nissan in the U.S., which I don't necessarily agree that they should have, they had one of the great ones, We Are Driven.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah.
It was great.
Yep.
I mean, you know, Datsun was hot back then.
It was.
So...
And then they used to have Keep It Simple, and they can't say that anymore.
Yeah, and then I mentioned the famous Somewhere West of Laramie ad for the Jordan Playboy. Now, you know, all the negatives came out. I was like, wow, Jordan went out of business. Yeah, well, that has nothing to do with, you know,
a great line.
A great advertising campaign. I mean, the car, he fumbled his way to oblivion, but that was a great.
Sure, and think about it. It doesn't mention cars. It doesn't mention roads. It just suggests Somewhere West of Laramie.
Yeah, it's Somewhere West of Laramie, there's a hot girl driving a cool car, and this cowboy is riding next to her. I mean, you know, what more do you need, you know?
That's right.
One other thing that I wanted to touch on Subaru's going to be showing a diesel CVT Outback at the Geneva show. And I know you're not a fan of CVTs, and I don't think any enthusiast
is. Well, repeat that slowly again, John. A Subaru diesel
CVT.
CVT. Wow.
Yeah, I almost missed that because my wife messaged me Zoom Zoom. She mentions that.
Oh, well, Zoom Zoom's a great tagline.
It's a great tagline, yeah. Diesel is good news, though, I think. I mean, I don't know. I don't think they're going to sell that well, but I think we're going to get a push because of CAFE. And, you know, if you look at the Chevy Cruze diesel that
And Ram announced today
Ram diesel
for the 1500 Ram.
And then think of all the exactly. Think of all the certainly all the General Motors models that could take that 2-liter diesel.
Right.
Think of how much you could expand the 3-liter V6 diesel in the Chrysler line. So I think we're going to get a push just because of CAFE. Americans aren't necessarily ready for it. If gas is $3.25 a gallon, diesel is usually at $3.75 at that point. But once you get up to $4, they tend to be a lot closer
together. But again, you know, I keep saying, you know, diesels typically get about 30% better fuel economy. Mm-hmm. So unless the price of diesel is more than 30% than gasoline, mm-hmm. you're coming out ahead.
Mm-hmm.
And but not people don't do the math, or they don't know that they have to add 30% to figure out whether it's worth it or not.
I drove diesel Volkswagens this year and last year to the Chicago Auto Show, and up in this part of the country, the great thing is you don't have to stop for fuel along the way. You can usually make it both ways on a single tank on one of those cars. And in cold weather, who wants to get out and pump gas?
True. I think you're wrong, though. I think they're going to sell better than you think. I don't know what you think.
I hope you're right. But, I mean, you know, this gets back to the whole thing about anytime we write something at automobilemag.com about the stereotypical diesel stick shift station wagon, we get readers saying, oh, that would sell like hotcakes. Well, no, it would just sell to you, me, and maybe four other people, and that's it.
That's true.
So we'll see.
But we do have impeccable taste in cars.
We do have impeccable taste in cars. Unfortunately, a lot of our neighbors don't.
So I see you guys just drove the Cayman S.
We did. I didn't drive it myself, but yes, we've driven it.
My contention is that if you go to the site, you know, that Porsche released those photos of the new 911, mm-hmm. and the original 911. It was shocking.
The difference.
Oh, shocking, right. But
in size,
yeah. My contention is the Cayman S and Boxster are the new driver's Porsches. If you really want to drive, I mean,
closer to the original,
especially the Cayman and the Cayman S,
right.
Because the size, the coupe, you know.
And by the way, I need to mention that was a Jorg Cocker story, and of course, he drives everything. He drives those cars before Porsche executives get to drive them, which is why we're one of the reasons we're very happy to have them, but. Well, it all gets back to the whole idea of inevitably, what would you rather have, a mid-engine Porsche or a rear-engine Porsche? And as much as Porsche has done with that certain rear-engine car, the mid-engine one is the one I would choose hands down.
Yeah.
Agreed. Hey, why don't we take a quick commercial break, and let's get our guest John Davis to come on the show. So, Ben, let's give a shout-out to our friends at Bridgestone.
So this performance football is another way Bridgestone is bringing its tire technologies to the world of sports.
That's right. The same polymer technologies that allow you to take sharp turns with maximum precision on our Potenza tires is being put to use here. Troy Aikman and Deion Sanders are helping us test it out. Troy seems to like the control.
That ain't right, man.
Deion,
that ain't right.
Not so much.
Giddy up now, Deion.
At Bridgestone, our passion for performance knows no bounds.
So joining us now, John Davis from Ford Motor Company. Great having you on After Hours.
Thanks for having me here, John.
Now, we've been promoting you as the chief engineer of the C-Max, but you do a whole lot more than that at Ford.
Yeah, so I actually have responsibility for all the small cars at North America. So it includes the Fiesta, the Focus, as well as the C-Max products.
And so Focus, Fiesta, C-Max, what else or is that it?
Well, within that, those are the primary brands, and of course we've got our performance models like our ST on Focus, and we'll be introducing our ST on Fiesta later this year. And then within C-Max, we've got two different products, the hybrid and the plug-in hybrid we call C-Max Energy.
Well, tell us a little bit about the ST Fiesta then, because I don't think any of us have been in that car yet. We've been in the Focus ST and love it.
Yeah, so if you love the Focus ST, you're going to really enjoy the Fiesta ST. It brings, again, a lot of the styling cues that the Focus ST has, and, of course, our EcoBoost powertrains as well. So whereas today the Focus ST has the 2-liter EcoBoost, about 252 horsepower, we're going to use the 1.6-liter EcoBoost in the Fiesta, mated to a nice 6-speed transmission. You'll get about 197 peak horsepower. It's a lot of fun to drive. And, of course, in a very light car, very powerful engine, makes for a lot of fun.
Power to weight is a little bit better in the Fiesta?
A little better. I actually like the balance of the Fiesta ST just a bit better than the Focus. But either car are great fun to drive, of course, great to look at. And we load them up with great technologies and Recaro seats, so you can't go wrong. It's a lot of fun.
So does that mean the Fiesta ST will be quicker than the Focus ST?
I'll let you guys decide which one you...
You must have some internal 0-60 times.
We do, but we let you guys decide.
You're going to stay internal, obviously.
Exactly.
He forgot them on the way over.
Yeah, yeah.
Funny how that works.
When did it come out, the Fiesta ST?
Yeah, so this summer, the Fiesta ST will be hitting showrooms.
Cool.
What's the lead color on the Fiesta ST, since on the Focus it was that yellow?
Yeah, so our new color for the Fiesta ST will be molten orange.
Ah, molten orange.
Molten orange. You'll see the same color actually in Europe. So we're trying to launch globally with the same unique colors.
Molten, not molting orange.
That's correct. Yeah. Okay. Molten.
Have you guys ever thought about putting the new 1 liter in a motorcycle?
Well, we don't make motorcycles.
I know,
but were we to expand our automotive capabilities?
Sell them the 1 liter?
There might be people looking at it, but we're going to obviously look at it in terms of what we can do with it in our small car lineups.
Maybe a new Formula Ford or something.
Yeah, exactly. That'd be cool.
That'd be really cool, actually.
And we will launch the new engine. We call it the Fox internally, but it's the 1 liter 3-cylinder EcoBoost we will be launching in Fiesta later this year as well. Of course, that's going to be our fuel economy lead. We take a great small car, and get well over 40 miles per gallon. So we're very excited about offering that in our lineup, too.
What's the horsepower on that?
So it's about 123 horsepower.
Okay.
And again, when you made it to 5-speed manual, which is what we plan to offer here in the States initially, I think it's going to be a great product for customers that are seeking not only something that gets great fuel economy, but it's also very fun to drive.
Oh, it'll be manual only?
Right now, that's where we're going to...
You said initially, that's where I was going, because Americans don't buy manual transmissions, or very few of us do.
They don't, but surprising in our Fiesta product, we're actually running somewhere between 20 and 30% of manual transmissions. Which,
really?
Yes. Yeah,
that's unheard of.
And so from that standpoint, we think, again, this will be a good combination. Allows it to still be a pretty reasonable price. And pricing, of course, will be announced much later this year. Mm-hmm. But I think it's going to be a great package for somebody who's looking for something like that.
Go back to that take rate, because...
There's
hope. This is amazing. I want to say the take rate for manuals in the total American market is less than 10%.
Right.
Now, that's including everything into the kitchen sink. I'm sure if you looked at C-class cars, the take rate's probably higher, but I can't believe Ford's ever had anything close to that.
Yeah, and one of the things I think we see with Fiesta particularly is obviously it's a very price-sensitive segment. It's our entry product in the showroom. And so from that standpoint, people are driven to look at a lower-cost solution for themselves as buying a product like a Fiesta. And again, from that standpoint, you can get a great car at lots of great features and technologies, and some of them are searching out for an even lower priced entry model, and Fiesta provides that.
Well, with Fiesta, you have several higher trim levels that, you know, kind of pushes that car up into closer to $20,000. So are these mostly, are you getting a lower take rate on those high trim levels as a result?
Not a lower take rate, but, most of the
I mean, is
the
that
volumes.
Where the manuals are coming from, is at the low end then?
Some of them are at the low end, but we also offer them in the mid-series as well. And then, of course, the ST performance models. I mean, that's actually helping to boost our manual transmission take, both for Focus and for Fiesta, because that's the way we're going to offer those powertrains is really as manuals exclusively.
Remind me which automatic you have in the Fiestas.
So Fiesta carries our what we call our DPS6, our dual clutch power shift, just like in Focus. So it's really the same fundamental box, a little bit different hardware internally, but it's the same architecture that serves both the Fiesta product and the Focus today.
Americans getting used to a dual clutch must be part of the reason you're selling more manuals, though, or the higher take rate.
Yeah, I think from the standpoint of we've had some education we've had to go through with our customers in terms of the dual clutch. Obviously, it operates a bit differently than the conventional automatic.
It's not as smooth as
it's not as smooth,
automatic.
And we had our own learning curves that we had to progress through on both the Fiesta and the Focus product. We made a lot of improvements in terms of the smoothness of calibration, the shift events, even the launch capability. And so, from that standpoint, we're closing the gap between I'll call it traditional automatic performance and the dual clutch.
But it's still an ongoing program. Basically.
Sure. Yeah.
But part of the reason, of course, is you went with dry dual clutch,
exactly.
not a wet clutch, which
right.
the people who supply the wet clutch keep telling me Ford's got to change its opinion about this.
Yeah. Well, we like it. We think it adds an element of fuel efficiency to both of our vehicle lines, and that's part of our enabler to getting 40 miles per gallon on both the Fiesta and the Focus from a super fueler perspective.
Speaking of economy.
Yeah.
How about the C-Max?
Yeah, so the other product you've got in the studio today is our C-Max Energy, which is our plug-in hybrid vehicle. And it's really a one step beyond our conventional hybrid that we launched last year in C-Max. First time we've ever launched a brand in North America exclusively as a hybrid. And we really wanted to do it in two flavors. So the C-Max Energy takes all of what makes the hybrid great. It makes it even better from the standpoint of providing a moderate distance, about 20 miles of full electric capability. And then once you're done with that plug-in power, it moves seamlessly into hybrid mode. And so from the standpoint of people who want the ability and have the ability to plug their vehicle in, place of work, at home, wherever they're going during their day, it gives you that opportunity to actually drive this vehicle under moderate distances as a full electric vehicle. And that was really an important element from the standpoint of providing this capability. Clearly, hybrids will be the volume lead as opposed to plug-in electric vehicles. But the C-Max Energy is one of those vehicles that then can really allow you, again, under moderate distances, to operate as a real electric vehicle and then not have the range anxiety that you might have otherwise for a traditional electric vehicle.
And do you think more buyers will go with the hybrid versus the plug-in? Simply because of cost or the hassle of having to plug in or what?
I think some of it's going to be the unknown about the technology for some of the customers that may be a little bit more hesitant to adopt this kind of technology. But we see this as going to be maybe say about 20% or 15% of our total C-Max lineup, and we'll see how that matures. The irony is the way the federal incentives, tax incentives, go right now for plug-in vehicles. And even more so if you live in a state like California, you can actually acquire a fully equipped C-Max Energy for a less price than a C-Max hybrid.
Wow.
Because the battery size, of course, is what dictates the federal incentive. So the C-Max Energy with a 7.6 kilowatt hour battery gains you about $3,750 of a tax incentive. And the state of California offers another $1,500. So if I compared the two, our SEL C-Max Hybrid, which retails at $28,995, you'd actually come in about $500 or less than that if you were to purchase the C-Max Energy.
So the Energy, the plug-in, is what, about $5,000 more? Or how?
Yeah, so equivalent trim levels, the hybrid starts at $28,995 for our SEL, which is our high trim series. Base price is $25,995. The SEL Energy, we only offer it in one trim level, starts at $33,745. And so that's before the federal incentive. That knocks it down to basically just below $30,000 for a retail customer. So it's a great value from that standpoint if you get all this technology, the ability to really drive an electric vehicle. Some of the things maybe we can talk to you about in terms of the features and technology on the vehicle. So from an exterior perspective, of course, it looks just like the C-Max hybrid, but it's got obviously the plug-in feature. On the right or the driver's side fender, you're going to note the plug-in port. Of course, executed just like our battery electric Focus. And it's got the charge port light ring that gives you immediate feedback in terms of what the charge state of the vehicle is, and actually will pulse to tell you what quadrant or what sort of 25% of the battery you're charging up right now. We made that really easy to use. It's got kind of a novel opening door. The rest of it's really back to the utility of the car. From the standpoint, again, C-Max Hybrid provides lots of interior spaciousness. That's what we really see as the surprise and delight from our customers. In terms of how you can utilize the vehicle quite easily, we've got a one-handed operation to flip and fold the rear seat. And it's nice because you don't need really two hands to maneuver that seat down to make it flexible to put a variety of objects into the vehicle. And then, of course, lots of storage space. We've got hidden storage in the floor. We've got all kinds of cubbies to put your belongings in. But the other part relative to the interior spaciousness, this vehicle has almost 100 cubic feet of passenger volume. And really, that's more like large car volume. What people are surprised by is the C-Max rides on the footprint of a five-door Focus, and yet it has interior volume that feels like a much larger vehicle.
Because it's so much taller, right?
Because it's taller and because of the way the seating position is now, you're a little more upright, you're a little more in what we would call the command seating position as opposed to a lower passenger car cockpit seating position. And that really does give you a spaciousness and airiness inside the vehicle that's unlike traditional small cars. And that's what people are almost most impressed by, is that they didn't realize they could be this comfortable, have this much room in a car that's really this small and this maneuverable. The rest of the features are how we've provided the feedback and what we call HMI elements back to the customer. And this is also what we provide on the hybrid as well. We've got a dual screen cluster. We've got added technology in the center stack for MyFord Touch and the Sync system. Also, dual zone electric climate control, all of those features are standard as a part of the C-Max Energy and available in the C-Max Hybrid. The nice thing is you've got lots of feedback as well. One of the things that we wanted to do when we executed our hybrids, including both the base car and the Energy, was continue to include our DNA from the standpoint of the performance capability of the vehicle. So you're going to notice this doesn't drive, say, like a Toyota or Prius. It drives like a small, sporty, fun car. At the same time, if you want to get the best fuel economy out of it, we provided some coaching features within the cluster. So on the left-hand side, you can see elements that give you real-time feedback in terms of how you're doing from a driving style perspective. Features like a braking coach that every time you come to a complete stop, it'll give you some instant feedback around how much energy you've actually recaptured through the regenerative braking system. And in the right-hand side of the cluster, you'll actually see our growing leaves that we first introduced with our 2010 Fusion Hybrid. And that's really our eco guide. And what that does is over a 30-minute loop, it actually will show leaves growing on a series of vines to give you a quick indication of, are you driving efficiently? When you start driving a little more, maybe spiritedly, those leaves will fall away and they'll actually come off the vine. It gives, again, that customer a quick indication. There's all kinds of ways to set up that information as well. The other thing on the C-Max Energy is a way to actually progress through three different states of how to use the plug-in power. And we have a switchable feature in the bottom of the center stack. It's really our EV button. It allows you to progress between three different states. EV auto, where it's really let the brains of the vehicle figure out how to use that plug-in power. EV Now, which is drive it essentially as a fully electric vehicle. We've got great capability. You can run up to 85 miles per hour in EV mode. As we said, you get about 20, 21 miles of a plug-in distance to drive. And then EV Later. And EV Later is a great feature from the standpoint of, again, not having that range anxiety as a traditional fully electric vehicle. you can drive as a hybrid for hundreds of miles, then you might get to an area where you now want to drive as a full electric vehicle, switch it over to EV now, and now you can deploy or utilize that plug-in power.
Was that an issue that you really had to discuss with the EPA? I thought at first they didn't want this switch where you, the driver, could control when you use electric power or not.
Not so much the EPA, but there are some certain criteria around the onboard diagnostics OBD requirements that we've worked out with CARB associated with the button and the switchable conditions. But it's one of those great features that really allows you the best flexible use of that plug-in capability to sort of use it when you want to and not be mandated to utilize your plug-in power immediately off plug and out of your garage. Because we know some people are going to want to have flexible use of that plug-in capability.
Well, and that feature comes in really handy in towns like London where you have restrictions on using gasoline-powered cars in the city itself. That's kind of where that comes from, isn't it? At what point did you decide that the C-Max would be the conventional gas powered C-Max would not be sold in the U.S.? I think that was a pretty brilliant decision.
Yeah, that was early in the after really the plan was to incorporate this into the cycle plan from a North American perspective. It was almost from the beginning.
But you guys flipped on that because I was over in Europe driving the C-Max and the Grand C-Max, and there was no talk whatsoever of it. In fact, we were only going to get the Grand C-Max, and it was going to be not a hybrid at all. Yeah, and then 6-7 months later, boom, the company squashed those plans and came out with what you got.
Yeah, really, at the onset of the program, we looked at as a two-product strategy. One was going to be the Grand C-Max, and we were going to look at that as branded as a C-Max from a North American perspective, and then utilize the C-Max Hybrid and the C-Max Energy under that nomenclature to offer the five-door version or five-passenger version exclusively as a hybrid product. And the reason we changed our plans on that were twofold. One was in the lower-priced seven-seater segment, we didn't see the growth taking off like we expected. At one point in time, we thought this is a great opportunity to get in sort of below the $25,000 price segment with a seven-seater. And yet we were starting to see not as much pull in the marketplace from the other competitive products. In fact, some competitors actually exited the market as we were still in our development stages of really federalizing the Grand C-Max for North America. The other piece that we looked at it from the perspective of it looked like there was more opportunity in the hybrid segment than we thought in the more conventional segment. And so we actually turned our tables a little bit and decided, let's put our capacity investment towards exclusively the hybrid products. So really from the get-go, we'd always planned for the five-passenger version, the smaller vehicle, to be a dedicated hybrid vehicle, sort of have its own unique silhouette. And again, the Grand was sort of that we can find our way in the small, lower-priced seven-seater segment.
Well, it's that own unique silhouette portion that I think is the brilliant part, and that's that you've now identified the Ford C-Max in North America as a hybrid in the same way that people who don't know cars know a Toyota Prius is a green car in some way. I mean, that must have been part of the thinking, obviously.
Well, yeah, clearly Toyota is a successful entrant ahead of us, gives us some cues as to what might work. But the other thing that's important to draw on C-Max to utilize this, because we could have, of course, hybridized the Focus. But part of that issue, when we get back to having that roominess and airy feel within a small car, our small cars can be an inhibitor for a lot of our customers in North America who don't want to downsize too much. And so it provides a great blend, again, for customers feeling like they're not getting into such a small car, but also having a unique body style that sets it apart from other vehicles in our showroom. And the other thing it does is allows us to not have so much overlap within our own product lineup, because the C-Max has, if you just look sort of the overall interior spaciousness, it's about 20%, say, larger than a Focus 5-door, and about 20% smaller than an Escape. And so again, it's about not wanting to take away from the strength of our other products in our lineup, yet provide something new and again, not end up with that inhibitive level that maybe some of our customers look at and say, no, I don't want to downsize too much from a small car from a North American standpoint.
This vehicle, though, has been criticized, too, for not getting anywhere near the fuel economy label on it. Is there anything that you guys can do about that?
So we're listening to our customers. Obviously, we've heard the public discussion as well from Consumer Reports, and even EPA has commented. And we agree with EPA. The hybrids, from an industry perspective, not just Ford, are likely going to see greater variability in the fuel economy that the customers might observe. And we know that's going to be for a variety of reasons. Some of it's going to be for driving style that doesn't match the EPA trace, if you will. Some of it's going to be for conditions where they'll prompt the engine to come on. Obviously, the great thing about the energy savings in a hybrid is being able to run with the engine off for a period of time, run on that battery power, and then also recapture energy through the regenerative braking systems. And so as you get into colder temperatures or extreme warm temperatures, you're going to drive the engine for cabin comfort for the customer. And then the other element we know is that engine break-in periods and tire break-in periods, they're actually going to be a little longer on a hybrid product because the engine's not running as much. So if I'm expecting a 1,500-mile or 2,000-mile cycle to get to engine break-in, it's actually maybe as much as twice as long on a hybrid vehicle to get to that same engine runtime, depending on how you're utilizing it. So we've talked about the fact that if I look at C-Max and Fusion Hybrid that share the same power pack, under those operating conditions, if you're going to drive at higher speeds, say 75 miles per hour instead of 65, you might lose as much as 7 miles per gallon. If you drive in conditions that are colder, say 40 degrees ambient as opposed to, say, 70 degrees Fahrenheit, you might lose as much as 5 miles per gallon. Same thing in engine and tire break-in. New vehicle versus one that's broken into, say, 5 or 6,000 miles, you may see about a 10% improvement. And, of course, on a 45 or 50 mile per gallon targeted vehicle, that could be as much as 5 miles per gallon as well. So we see customer feedback, obviously some indicating that they're getting less than the label fuel economy. Others have described getting fuel economy equal to and even above the label. I think that's what we've experienced in the past as well with our prior hybrids. And we have been discussing and working with the EPA to understand, you know, what are the testing protocols that may need to change as a result of hybrid technologies.
Hey, it's probably a good time for us to get to some questions from the audience here for the rapid fire part of the show. Ben, let it rip. Okay. Okay, here's the rapid-fire part of the show. George from Brooklyn wants to know, John, does the C-Max grill close?
Yeah, so the we have active grill shutters in the C-Max, and they're actually behind the visible part of the grill, and they are designed to close at various operating conditions to improve aero efficiency. And so, yes, we do have them. They're standard equipment, as we do a number of aerodynamic technologies and features in the car.
Sean P. Walsh from Arlington, Virginia says, last week in the discussion of the Audi prom commercial, Gary Vasilash asked what dad would give his son the keys to a car like that. Heck, in Peter's case, he would have gotten them from Bill Mitchell. Failing that, he could always borrow his sister's Camaro.
Yes.
So that's a pretty good one. Mike D. White says, will you be sticking with the PowerShift dual-clutch transmission in the future, or will it be phased out for other types of transmissions?
Yeah, no, we plan to stick with the dual-clutch transmission. We think it's a good technology from the standpoint of balancing performance and fuel economy. As I mentioned earlier, we've had our learning curve to work through, and actually it's been a good performer for us. So from the standpoint of being able to provide a balance in terms of an auto transmission-like feature, as well as improve fuel economy, I think it's a good solution for us right now.
Todd, I'll throw this one to you. VRM Chris wants to know, does Geely really know what they're doing with Volvo, or are they really that incompetent?
You know, if Geely gets rid of Volvo, they probably know what they're doing with Volvo. The problem is, a couple of years ago when I was at Motor Trend doing the power list, I think it's Li Shifu is the chairman.
Yeah.
I gave him credit for saying he was going to let people at Volvo run Volvo, let them do that. Now they're maybe he's learning that if they keep Volvo production in Sweden, the costs of doing that are way too high for a company like Geely.
Yeah, could be, because the rumor's out there through Michael Dunn that Geely's going to dump Volvo.
Yeah, and I know Michael, and he usually knows what he's talking about.
He does.
I don't know if I believe him on the Buick situation.
Oh, yeah. I don't either, because he also said that SAIC, Shanghai Automotive Corporation, is going to buy Buick. I'm not sure if I go with that one either.
Yeah.
But like you said, Michael's, when it comes to China, he knows what he's talking about.
He certainly does.
Peter, Tom Serbo from Clearwater, Florida says, I follow Tommy Kendall and know him as a race driver in the SRT Viper. I'm wondering how their number 93 Viper did at the Daytona 24-hour race. Nowhere, and I mean nowhere, is there information as to whether the Viper finished and whether Tommy himself has any seat time in the race.
You know, it was MIA. I didn't even hear one thing about it.
So, very interesting.
And that program is, you know, they've got some difficulties with that program. They've been given allowances by IMSA to make them competitive, but, you know, it remains to be seen what's going to be the future for that program.
And I'll throw you this one, too. This comes from Admiral Akbar. He says, why has GM stuck with pushrod motors? Everyone else is going with overhead cams, but GM still goes with the pushrods.
Well, you know, that's just a different perspective. I mean, GM pushrod engines are quite sophisticated and outstanding performers and with decent fuel economy. So, you know, it's hard to argue. I mean, when you go to the non-pushrod motors, you're adding weight and you're adding mass at the top of the engine, higher center of gravity, more complication. You know,
Harder to fit under certain hoods. The pushrod engine is to GM what the 911 is to Porsche.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Keep refining it, keep improving it. They've done a good job. And V8s are becoming pretty low volume these days, so why not stick with what you're doing well?
Yeah, I'd add two things, too. Supposedly doing cylinder deactivations much easier with pushrods, mm-hmm. and I can tell you for a fact they're a lot cheaper to manufacture.
Yeah.
So you can put that money elsewhere.
And they'll be adding gas direct injection as well.
Yeah, the new Corvette has the latest small block.
Let's see, Wright Knight wants to know, I'll throw this to you, John, why on cars like hybrids and electrics is the large energy source of the free turning wheels not being used for some kind of small charging for various components?
That's a good question. I guess I've never looked at that end of it. Obviously, we are focused on recapturing energy from the perspective of the brake system or simulating the brake system, which is what we really do to capture it. And we do encourage, obviously, as much coasting as possible to gain as much efficiency. But that's a good point. I don't know if we've looked at that end of trying to recapture energy out of it through a magnetic system or something like that.
Mm-hmm. Glenn Strauss says, I live in Pennsylvania. Here, the state taxes the hell out of diesel. It currently costs, on average, 20 to 30 cents per gallon more than premium. Currently, diesel is selling for over $4.20 a gallon. With that cost, the fact that a diesel on average sells for more than a similarly optioned gas-engined auto, and most diesels are higher in maintenance costs, it makes the decision to purchase a diesel a little more difficult. I get his point, but I would say look at the price of gasoline, go ahead, use premium, add 30% to it. Get out a calculator. It makes it easier to do. You'll find that it's substantially higher than $4.20 a gallon, I'm betting. It's probably going to come in at $4.60 a gallon. So you're really coming out 40 cents a gallon ahead with a diesel. But he does have a good point. The upfront cost of a diesel is higher.
Yeah, the cost of cleaning up diesel these days is, I've heard, as high as it's as costly as doing a new hybrid, for example. So that's why, for example, the Chevy Cruze comes in at $26,000, a pretty well-equipped Chevy Cruze with the diesel. But, you know, that raises a question. We've talked about Chrysler and GM getting into diesels. John, while we've got you here, Ford is heavily invested in EcoBoost, which is gasoline direct injection with turbocharging.
Right.
What do you see the future for diesels outside of heavy duty trucks?
So obviously in Europe they fare very well, but part of that is related to the fuel tax structure,
yep,
depending upon which market you're in. You know, that Chevy Cruze example you brought up is a great one, because for the same $26,000, you can actually have a C-Max hybrid. And so from that standpoint, from the standpoint of how it's equipped, as well as the overall interior spaciousness and flexibility, I guess my contention is right now the value is still better from the standpoint of the limited application of the hybrid, given what appears to be competitively the cost of including the technology for diesel and the emissions treatment. Longer term, that may change. I think part of that's going to be, what is our energy policy? What does our tax structure longer term look like for fuels? And does the payback period look better from a customer perspective?
The thing is, the hybrids are at their best in city situations and short, a lot of stop and go driving. And diesels kind of come to life on those long trips. I don't know. So I've got to think that obviously you guys are looking at it for the United States.
Well, and of course the EcoBoost technologies, and I know you guys talked about them before, are very much like two-thirds of the diesel technology that exists, right? They're high pressure fuel injection, direct injection, and they're turbocharging. And from that perspective, may not be overall as completely efficient from a combustion perspective, but from the standpoint of including those same kinds of technology at an affordable price from a manufacturing perspective and what the customers will bear. I mean, we realize that there's some pressure from the standpoint of we still have to have a reasonable return on the technologies we incorporate in our products. While customers say they're seeking out fuel economy, quite often they're not necessarily willing to bear the full cost of those technologies that come into the vehicle.
I'd say two things, though. Next year, Europe goes to Euro 6,
right,
which gets very close to Tier 2 Bin 5.
Right.
Europe will start using the exact same emissions technology that we do. That's going to give a tremendous amount of scale to that technology and drive down cost. Right. Secondly, I'd say, I'll bet you that Chevy Cruze gets better real-world fuel economy than the C-Max.
Well, that may be a challenge.
I'm talking combined.
Combined.
I'm talking combined. This is the one thing in my experience is the new lithium ion hybrids miss the mark by a wide margin. And I believe it's because they can probably get through the EPA test, the FTP 75, on pure electric power or with a lot more electric assist than the old lithium or nickel metal hydride batteries could. I was always amazed that the nickel metal hybrids nailed the fuel economy number. I mean, it didn't matter if you drove them easier, they nailed the number. In my experience, and I'm not just saying the Fords, this is true of Toyota, this is true of the rest of them, the lithium ions don't deliver it. And I'd say, and we had this argument or this discussion last week, small displacement turbo engines don't get the numbers either, real world. That's why I'm betting on diesels. Boy, do they deliver. So we'll see.
We'll see
where it goes. Let's see. CD Nay says, does anybody make a CVT diesel? We just talked about that. Subaru is going to show us a CVT diesel at the Geneva show. Brian Young, Peter, wants to know. He says, BMW unveiled the 3 Series GT. Isn't this the question or the answer to a question nobody asked?
Yet another one, yes. I don't know. I mean, the 5 Series GT was kind of an abomination, but they just didn't get enough. I will grant that the 3 Series GT looks better, but I don't know.
That's more of a European car than a North American car. The European customer, and it's also another example of BMW, just like Mercedes and Audi, wanting to get into every little subsegment possible.
Absolutely. I mean, they just are insatiable for every niche. They will cover every niche they can.
Hobo Bob, and I'll throw this to both you, Todd, and Peter, because I don't know the answer to this. Hobo Bob wants to know, what does NASCAR use in their windshields and windows? They're obviously unbreakable and fireproof.
I'll throw that to you, Peter, because I'm more of an F1 fan.
Yeah, it's the backlight's plastic, and the side windows are plastic. The windshield is still, I don't know if it's a production piece. I think it is, but, they don't shatter. I mean, they spider web, but they don't seem to shatter. Now, the other windows are all plastic, so I don't know what they're using. I thought it was factory windshields, but...
I thought it was factory windshields, too. I don't know. But remember, they've also got steel bar reinforcements that, they just leave an opening for the driver to look out at.
Yeah.
So that glass has got a lot of support behind it.
Yeah.
NASCAR would be Fusion. That's out of your purview, I guess.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I can't answer that one.
I need to clarify the prom comment.
Yeah.
For the record, I didn't go to my senior prom. I went to the Grandy Ballroom to see Iggy and the Stooges, followed by Three Dog Night, followed by the headliner, Creedence Clearwater Revival.
Oh, my God. What a concert.
Yeah, it was awesome.
The Grandy. It doesn't exist anymore.
No.
It's gone. John, back to you. Jerry Highwater wants to know, how about a Fiesta and/or Focus two-door coupe here in the USA?
There is some interest, obviously, in those products. We continue to hear it, much like we also hear people want us to bring back Focus wagons. Right now, the big buying public in those segments are looking for more traditional sedans and hatchbacks. So it's not that there aren't, there isn't any desire for them. They just are pretty low in terms of the overall demand for either the segment in B-car Fiesta-sized vehicles or Focus-sized vehicles. But we still make, products like the three-door hatchback for Fiesta in Europe, and that's certainly something that's available to us. If we see the segment trending differently, it's something we can do.
And if you could bring back those Focus wagons, install a diesel and a manual, you'd sell them by the dozens.
Yeah.
At least to you and John.
Yeah, that's right. No, I want mine with a CVT.
There you go.
Hey, Chip signaling me here, there's one more thing that you wanted to show us in the C-Max here?
Yeah, so,
app or?
So one of the great technologies that we've included, and we started this with the battery electric Focus, was our app we call My Ford Mobile. And so what this is it's the opportunity to get connected with your plug-in vehicle from Ford. And so in this case, you can actually get an image of the C-Max. We'll get an update here in terms of the data, but it tells you, as an example, is it plugged or unplugged, what the charge state of the battery is, even what the fuel gauge reads. And the other thing it's got is some great features in terms of setting it up. So you've got elements from being able to locate your vehicle in terms of if you've left it somewhere in a parking lot and maybe you've had an interesting evening, you have to go back and find your vehicle. But also some other elements. You can set up go times to precondition your vehicle, set a starting temperature, and use plug-in power to precondition the vehicle as opposed to the engine power once you start driving or battery electric power. So it's got some great features in it. It's also got the ability to locate charging stations with a map service within it, and also the ability to remotely lock and unlock your car, pre-start the vehicle, et cetera. So it's a great new feature we've introduced. It's actually going to be out in the Apple store later this month. And will be available to all of the C-Max Energy as well as the Fusion Energy customers and obviously battery electric for the Focus. So it's a great app, and it allows connectivity to your car and a way to plan better, really, about how you utilize your energy. The other thing that's hidden within this, and you can set this up in your vehicle as well, is value charging. So we actually map out 800 power services around the country and identify the most favorable charging times where you've got off-peak charging hours that you can take advantage of. So if you can charge your car overnight between 11 p.m. and 1 a.m., if that's the non-peak hours, you can actually realize a better benefit in terms of charging it at home or wherever that location is.
And that could be a significant savings in terms of electrical charging.
Yeah, depending on where you are in the country. Right? Some areas are pretty flat. But other areas have very high peak costs. And if you can move it off of those peak hours and set yourself up this way, it's a great way to continue to save money and get an electric vehicle.
Yeah. Okay, we got time for one more here. And Peter, this goes to you. It's from Danny Boy in Independence, Ohio. He says, it appears Mr. Penos has hit the ground running with the Delta wing. Any suggestions to Mr. Penos on how to ensure the wing is successful, and where will the wing land?
Actually, it's not very promising for the Delta wing because all the key players have bailed. And the latest and the most critical is Michelin Tires. It's not going to be involved in. Believe me, Michelin's involvement was key to the success of that program. And, you know, I hate to say it, but I think Don's kind of chasing at windmills with this project. And, you know, I'm not optimistic about it at all.
Very interesting. Well, that's probably a good note to end this up on. But, John Davis, thanks for coming in on After Hours.
Thanks for having me. Appreciate
it. And especially for bringing a C-Max into the studio.
Thank you.
We love having cars
good.
In here.
Glad to be here.
Todd, great having you back, as always.
John,
we'll see you again
you.
In the future. And Peter, catch you again next week, man.
Absolutely.
And thanks, everybody else, for having tuned in.
AutoLine After Hours is brought to you by Bridgestone. Your journey, our passion.
Visit our website, autoline.tv, where you can watch us live Thursday nights at 6 p.m. Eastern. Get your daily news fix with AutoLine Daily and in-depth analysis and interviews with AutoLine This Week. There's all that and much more at AutoLine.tv.